Today's Shir Masechet Babas Daf Kuf Samach Vav. We will begin at the Mishnah towards the bottom of Daf Kuf Samach Hei Amid Beis. Says the Mishnah, Kasba Zuzin Meya Dinan Slam. There are 25 slime in 100 Zuz. But the Shtar that we have here says that it was 100 Zuz that are Dinan Slon Esm, the 20 Slon. So there's obviously something incorrect here. So the question is, what is the number? In other words, it says in the Shtar that I owe you 100 Zuz that are 100 Zuz that are 20 Sela, but actually they're 25 Sela. What do I owe you? So the halacha is, I only have to pay you 20 Sela. Because, as we know, the halacha is, Hamotzi Mechaveroi Olav Araya. So if there's a question, if I owe you 100 Zuz or 20 Sela, we go with the lower number, and I will only have to give you 20 Sela. And as the Rishonim explain, even though we've learned a number of times that there's a question when somebody makes a self-contradictory statement, do we say Tfais Lashon Rishon or Tfais Lashon Achron? Do we go after the first part of my statement or the second part of my statement? That's in a situation where we can't reconcile the two sides of the statement. However, here the two sides of the statement can be reconciled. Because as we know, in the times of the Gemara, coins weren't just representing a certain value. It wasn't that a dollar is equal to 100 cents if it's a new dollar or an old dollar. Rather, what it meant was that a coin had intrinsic value with the metal and the currency. And therefore, even though typically 100 zuz equal 25 sela, it could be it was a very poor type of zuz that I was giving you, and that's why I only owe you 20 sela. Or vice versa. Again, if it's said in the shtar, meyer didn't tloss and slime, that I owe you 100 zuz that are 30 sela, and as we just said, it's really 25 sela in 100 zuz. Again, the halacha is eloy elemano kesef. I only have to give you 100, zuz, not 30 sela. Again, because we could understand the statement because the type of coin that was given. Continues the Mishnah. If the document says Zuzin de Inun, this coin, and doesn't say how many coins, Nimchak, the rest of the statement is erased. Says the Mishnah Daloch is Ein Pox Mishtaim Kesef. Since the Shtar doesn't say exactly how much I owe you, but it does say I owe you Zuzin, which is a plural, so we have to define it to the least amount, which will mean I will have to give you 2 Zuzin. Again, based on the concept of a Mois Mechaver Olav Araya, I have to give you the least possible. However, we see from here, point out the Rishonim, a very important halacha. Earlier in our parak, we discussed that when there's an erasure in the shtar, it puts the validity of the shtar in question. Here, we're clearly referring to a situation where there's an erasure in the shtar, and there's a question how to understand and then define the shtar. But there is no question in our Mishnah regarding the validity of the shtar. Why? Through Seder Rishonim, from here we see where it's obvious that the erasure wasn't because somebody was tampering with the shtar. It's just because it's a situation that words got erased. We don't invalidate the shtar. But because it doesn't say what it means, we have to interpret it on to the benefit of the loiva. Similar situation, if the shtar reads, Sloim the inan, di sloim, the nimchak, and it doesn't say how many sloim, so since it's the plural, ein pochus mishtayim. Similarly, dachoinus the inan, it says the word dachoinus, but it doesn't say how many dachoinus I owe you, the nimchak, the rest of the sentence is erased, ein pochus by mishtayim, I have to give you 2 dachoinus, but I don't have to give you more. Continues the Mishnah. Kasba mamala mona. If the top of the shtar says one amount, or mamata masayim, the top of the shtar, the beginning of the shtar says 100, and the end of the shtar says that I owe you 200. Or vice versa. Mamala, the top of the shtar says I owe you Messiah 200. Or Mamata, and the bottom of the shtar says I owe you mana. The loch is Hakol Hoylach Achta Tachtan. And we have, again, point out to Rishonim, this is not a situation of Tfais Lashon Rishon, Tfais Lashon Achron. These are two separate statements. But the question is, which is the statement to follow? So we follow the statement at the bottom of the shtar. However, remind us to Rishonim, as we learned earlier in our perek, that even though we learn from the bottom of the shtar, provided it's not the last line of the shtar, because we learned earlier in our perek, we never learn from the last line of the shtar. Ask the Mishnah, if we're going to follow the end of the shtar and not the beginning of the shtar, so the obvious question, im came lama kaisman salian, so what's the purpose of writing the beginning of the shtar? Answers the Mishnah, shem timchak ois achas minatachten, if a letter will be missing, if we don't know how to read the bottom, then we rely yilmin minatachten. However, I did see that the Tosfos Rid indicates the following. He was saying that if the top and the bottom aren't the same, we follow the bottom, not the top. But says the Tosfos Rid, what would be the halacha if the top speaks about details? It says, I owe this much for this and that much for that. And the bottom is just a sum, which is supposed to be the sum of all the numbers mentioned on the top. And the sum, the numbers don't add up. If I add together all the numbers on the top, I don't get to the sum mentioned on the bottom. So says the Tosfos Rid, that even though we just finished paskening, that we always follow the bottom of the shtar, that's only in the case that the Mishnah refers to, where the top and the bottom speak about sums, but the two sums are not consistent. So which is the number to follow? We follow the number on the bottom. But if the top is the detail, and the bottom is the sum, it clearly represents just an adding mistake. He didn't add together the numbers on the top properly. And then, if you do the addition properly, and you get to the number on top, that would be the number to follow. Interesting shaila that I saw that was asked to Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein. A check was written to Tzedakah. And we know that when you write a check, there are two parts that you really write the amount twice. You write it out in numbers, and then you write it out in a sentence exactly how much you're giving. So here we had a check that the numbers and the statement wasn't consistent. Meaning, the shiloh that he discusses was, in the numbers it says that I gave $3,000 to Tzedakah, and in the check it says I gave $300. The question is, How much do I owe? 300 or 3,000? It's a significant difference. Or the shaila could be vice versa. What's the halacha? So he says, even though normally the halacha ought to be hamotz mechaver ol of araya, and therefore, if there's a question, do I owe you 300 or 3,000? I only have to give you $300, which in itself is not such an easy psak, because it's not clear to understand the check as a shtar choiv. A check could be maybe considered more like Shava Kesef, but certainly he says in a situation where it was written to Tzedakah, that we've discussed on other occasions, that whenever there's a question of obligation to Tzedakah, there we don't follow the concept of Amoitz Mechaveri Olav Araya. Rather, there we follow the concept that Tzedakah prevails, and we'll have to give, he'll have to give $3,000, not $300. Tanra Rabbanan, says the Gemara, Amar Kesef, if somebody used the word kesef, how do we interpret that word? Ein pachas medina kesef. We say the word kesef means that I obligated to give you a dinar kesef. If I use the words kesef dinarim or dinarim kesef, then halacha is ein pachas mishnei dinarim kesef. I owe you two dinarim of kesef. If I use the words kesef bedinarim, what that means is ein pachas mishnei dinarim da half kesef. We have to take the value. There are silver dinarim, there are gold dinarim. Obviously, the gold dinarim are much more valuable than the silver dinarim. We have to take the value of two gold dinarim and give it to you in silver. And the Gemara analyzes this price. Amamar, kesef, if I use the word kesef, Ein pachs medina kesef. I owe you at least a dinner kesef. Ask the mar, who says I owe you a dinner of kesef? Maybe what I owe you is a nascha, is a piece of silver. Amar Belezer, the kos be mitbeya. I use the word coin. So if I use the word coin, obviously it means kesef. Veima priti, who says it's a dinner kesef that I owe you? Maybe it's a smaller coin, only a prut of kesef. Answers the Gemara. Amar papa be asra leisagi priti de kaspa. Referring to an area that people don't call a pruta, a coin. Another brisa, similar brisa. Tana b'ana d'hav. If it's written to the brisa that I owe you gold, ein pachs medina d'hav. I can't pay you less than one gold dinner. If the shtar says the words d'hav dinrin or dinrin d'hav, ein pachs mishnei dinrin d'hav. I have to give you at least two gold dinarim. If it says in the shtar, to have the dinarim, gold and dinarim, then I have to give you ein pachas mishnei dinarim kesef. I have to give you the value of two silver dinarim, but I have to give it to you to have in gold. Again, analyzes the Gemara this brisa. Omamar, to have, if the document reads the word to have, ein pachas medin to have. I can't give you less than one dinner of gold. Ask the bar again, Eman Nascha. Maybe all I have to give you is just a piece of gold. Amar Belezer, again, the Kosmateya. It's clearly written to Shtad that I'm giving you coins. A piece of gold is not a coin. Veima Priti. Maybe I mean a pruta of gold, not a dinner of gold. A pruta of gold obviously being much less valuable than a dinner of gold. Answers the Gemara. Priti did the Havaloy Avdinchi. They didn't make prutas out of gold. If I use the words zahav dinarim, ein pachas mishnei dinarim kesef, I have to give you the value of two silver dinarim, but I have to give it to you in zav in gold. Ask the Gemara, veima dahav apricha. Maybe it should not be understood that veima dahav apricha betray dinri dahav akamar. Maybe what I meant was that I have to give you the value of two gold dinarim. Obviously much more than just the value of two silver dinarim. But I don't have to give it to you in gold dinarim. I could give it to you in just in gold pieces and gold in fragments of gold. Answers the Gemara. Amra Baya Yad Bal Shtar Techtoina. Which means as follows. The Shtar has the statement of Zohar B'dinarim. And the Zohar B'dinarim could be interpreted in one of two ways. It could be interpreted as the value of two silver dinarim to be paid in gold, or it could be the value of two gold dinarim paid in pieces of gold. Obviously, the first interpretation is a lot less valuable than the second interpretation. And as we've been saying in the entire shir, the halach is ha-moitzi mechaveroi olav haraya. So, if I'm holding the money and you want to make a claim against me, you could get the less than more. Ask the Gemara, Ihochi, and the Rishonim take out the parentheses. This is what they ask. Ihochi Reishanami, which means as follows. In the previous brisa, even though it's a different brisa, Tosfos points out, it's obvious that these two brises were learned together. In the previous brisa, we said that where the words of the have kesef dinarim were used, we say it means that I have to give you the value of two dinarim of gold given in silver. But again, why do we say it that way? Why do we say I have to give you the value of two dinarim of silver given in silver? If we're following the concept of amoitzim chaver al varaya, that I always have to give less rather than more. Answers the Gemara, Amar of Ashi, Reish of the cost of Dinri, save for the cost of Dinarim. Achlokes Rashbam and Tosfos, I don't understand the Gemara's teretz, even though it doesn't really change anything significantly. Rashbam explains that the Gemara is teaching us there's a word called Dinri, and there's a word called Dinarim. Dinri means gold, and Dinarim means silver. So in the first brisa, the word Dinri was used, so it has to mean gold Dinarim, because Dinri means gold. The second brisa, the word dinarim was used. Dinarim represents silver. Taisvis learns a little differently. Taisvis agrees that the word dinri means gold. But Taisvis says the word dinarim, unlike the Rashbam who says the word dinarim only means silver, Taisvis says the word dinarim can mean silver or gold. So if we combine these two facts that we've been learning, that the word dinarim can mean silver or gold, combined with the fact that there is a concept that we've been discussing so many times of Amaitzi Mechaveira Olav Haraya, so if the word dinarim can mean silver or gold, we're going to interpret it to mean silver. The reason Taisvis prefers this pshat is because Taisvis doesn't want, because the Gemara doesn't use the word Elo Amar Rav Ashi. Taisvis wants that Rav Ashi should be building on top of what we just learned. That we just learned the concept of Amaitzi Mechaveira Olav Haraya, and that's why in the case of dinarim, which can mean silver or gold, we say means silver. According to the way the Rashbam learns, this teretz has nothing to do with anything we learned till now. Dinri means gold. Dinar means silver. There's no question. Ask the Gemara, Umenar Temri, and where do we see that there's a difference between the word dinri and the word dinar? Umenar Temra, the Shani ben Dinri dinarim, there's a difference between those two words, says the Gemara the Tanya. Just a word of introduction. The Torah teaches us that if a woman has a baby, she has to bring two kabbonis, carbon oil and carbon chattas. If she's wealthy, she brings a lamb as a chattas and a bird as a carbon oil. If she's not wealthy, she brings two birds, one as a chattas and one as an oil. That's regarding a yoledes. The Torah also speaks, and I always emphasize this when I say this, this is the din of the rice, it's not the din that we follow nowadays. It's not the rule to be followed. But according to the Torah Midaraisa, a woman's life is divided into different cycles. Really, it's 11 days, and then after 11 days, it goes into another category. First, she's in a category of a Nida. And Midaraisa, a woman who's a Nida, even if she saw dam the entire time, after 7 days, as long as she stops seeing dam, she goes to the mikvah and she's fine. No Zayin Nekiyim required. 7 days are required, but no Zayin Nekiyim. And again, I have to emphasize, that's a din d'oraisa, it's not the din that we follow. Then the woman begins a cycle of 11 days. During those 11 days, if she sees dam for 3 consecutive days, she becomes a Zava G'dayla. A Zava G'dayla requires Zayin Nekiyim, 7 clean days, and also must bring 2 birds as a carbon, one as a chattis and one as an oiler. And until she brings those kabbonis, in both cases, both by yoledes and azava, she can't eat kachim, she can't eat any kabbonis. Again, that's the din of the raisa. Our din is that any woman who sees any dam at any time has to wait even more than Zayin Nekiyim, actually. But again, we're not learning Masechta Nida today. So ask the Gemara again, Umnat Temra, the Shani ben Dinri l'dinarim, that the word dinner and the word dinarim don't mean the same. The Tanya. It says in the Braisa, He Shishayu la Safik Chamesh Leidus. She has a question. Did she miscarry a fetus? That if somebody, Rechmal Tzlam, miscarries a fetus, she's considered a Yoledus and she has to bring a carbon? Or Safik Chamesh Leidus? She saw dam for 3 consecutive days, but we're not sure, as I explained a moment ago, that she's a Zava, and she has to bring Kabbonis, or maybe she was during the time that she becomes a Nida, and she doesn't have to bring Kabbonis. So Allah is Mavi Karbon Echad. One carbon she has to bring. Because until she brings a carbon, as I said, she'll never be able to eat Kachim. Mavi Karbon Echad V'chelos Bezvachim. Then she could eat Kabbonis. Even though she perhaps owes 5 Kabbonis, so the Rashbam makes a very interesting analogy. So just like if a person became Tamei on numerous times, going to the mikveh once is enough to be Matar the person. Here too, the person, even though she maybe had 5 times a baby, or 5 times she was a Zava, in terms of being able to eat Kachim, one set of Kabbonis allow her to eat Kachim. But now the question is, does she have to bring 4 more sets? Because we don't know, was she Yoledes? We don't know, was she a Zava? So the halacha is, Ein v'sha'al le'achayla. She doesn't have to bring any more sets. And as Drushayim explained this, the Raisa uses the words V'ein hashar alecha, she's not obligated to bring. It seems to mean that she wants to, she can. What does the Braisa teach us? So the Mefarshim, the Rishar, explain as follows. When it comes to an animal, there's a problem of chulin bazar. You're not allowed to bring an animal as a carbon if you're not obligated to bring it. So if her carbon was a behemoth, it would be an option. She couldn't bring it because she maybe it's chulin bazar. Given that it's a bird, there is no concern of chulin bazar by a bird. But there's a different problem. The chatos, how do we bring an oif? How do we bring as a bird as a carbon? Malika was done. The kohen slit the neck of the animal with his fingernail, which normally for a shechita would make it into an aveilah. So here, this chatos won't be eaten. Because on one hand, if she's mechuyiv to bring the karma chatos, it's a regular karma chatos. On the other hand, if she's not obligated to bring it, you can't bring a karma chatos as a nedava, as a donation, so we're going to have to throw it out. And that's why the Brice says, you know, it's not a chayva, because if you bring it, you can end up throwing out all the karma chatos. Hayalecha mishaleidus, continues the Brice, but let's say she certainly had five births. Chamish leidus vados, chamish seve vados, so she certainly was a zava five times. So again, mevi'a carbon echad, one carbon is enough v'chalas b'zvachim that she should be able to eat carbonus. However, now that we know for sure that she had these multiple ladies, that she had this multiple zivas, v'sha'a l'achayva. Says the Braisa a story. Ma'isa v'amdu kinim b'shalayim b'din rizav. This is the point that we're trying to make, that the word dinre means zav, that the price of birds went up, and they went up to dinre zav. Amar Shimon Gamliel, Haman hazeh, he made a shvua in the Beis HaMikdash, im olin halayla, at shiyehe ben inarim, that the price will drop. Nichnas lebezdin, he went to the bezdin v'limit, and he taught the following halacha. He shesherlah chamesh leidus vados, chamesh zivus vados, mevivi carbon echad, she could bring one carbon, v'chelos bezvachim, then ishallah chayva. So now, the what happened was there was a large demand for carbonus, because every woman had to bring a carbon for every time she was a zava, for every time she had it laid up. But now he says one carbon is enough. So the demand for kinim went down. V'omdu, kinim by b'yom b'r'v'sayim. They dropped by a quarter. They were a quarter of the original price. But what's nogeya to us? What's relevant to us is that the word dinre means off. So the Rishonim asked the obvious question. How could Rav Shimon ben Gamliel say a psak, which was patently incorrect, that a woman that had five ladies, or a woman who was a Zava Gedayla, only has to bring one carbon, when the halacha is she has to bring five? Three answers are given by the Rishonim to this question. One answer is that the Gemara Masechta Krisis quotes the opinion of Rabbi Kiva, who actually holds that a woman who had five ladies, vados, or was ziva five times, one carbon is enough. So Shimon Gamliel said, I'm going to pass him like Rabbi Gamliel, like Rabbi Kiva. One teretz. Another teretz is, as many times the Gemara uses the concept of Eis Lasis Lashem, Hefer Teresecha. Shimon Gamliel saw that the price was going up, and he was concerned, so he did what he felt he had to do. The third teretz is the teretz of Rabbeinu Tam, as the Mefarshim, the Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Tam, as Mefarshim explained. Rabbeinu Tam says that they thought, and that's actually what they thought was the halacha, that not only does a woman who had five ladies, or a woman who was a zava five times, have to bring five kabanas, she can't eat kachim until she brought all five sets of birds. So now, explain the Mefarshim and understanding of Rabbeinu Tam, traveling to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, wasn't that common. And women weren't necessarily oil regal every yontif. So the woman is finally oil regal, and she has a whole group of kabbalas that she's obligated to bring, because of Leida and Ziva. And now she's in Yerushalayim for yontif, where the main meat that was eaten was from kabbalas, and she's going to want to eat kabbalas. and it's Erev Yontif, and she wants to bring all of her obligations in order that in Yontif she could eat Kachin. So we have a real supply and demand situation, where the demand for Kinim went up, because all of the women are trying to fulfill all of their obligations, all before Yontif. So he said, no rush. You only have to bring one set of kabonis, one set of kinim, in order to be able to eat kachim and yontif. And the rest of the kabonis that you're obligated to bring, he's not backing off from that. You bring a chalamad, you bring after yontif. So the demand for immediate kinim dropped, and that's how he was able to get the price of kinim to go down to a quarter. And this gemara is the basis for a very famous Magen Avraham that says, that he quotes the Shaila of Tshuvos Tzemach Tzedek, that says if the price of fish goes up, if they're raising the price of fish because everybody wants to buy fish l'kavod Shabbos, fish should not be bought. As it teaches us in our Gemara, that the Chachamim, the Beis Din, has the obligation to see that there shouldn't be price gouging. Even though, as the Tzemach Tzedek and the Chasam Sofer discussed, the two situations are really not the exact same. Why? Number one, by Shabbos, there's a concept, the Gemara says, all of what we're supposed to get during the year is prescribed, is written, inscribed on Rosh Hashanah, Chutz Mitzvah Shabbos V'Yontif. So even if the price of fish goes up, it doesn't bother us, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us a special account for our Shabbos needs, if we believe indeed that that's what Hashem does. Still, say to Paiskim, you're not obligated to eat fish. You're not obligated to eat fish. Moreover, it says also, actually Rabbi Kiva says it, and it's quoted in the Halachan Hilfah Shabbos, Asay Shabbat Chachol V'Altad Starach L'Briyas. Even though there's an important concept of Oynik Shabbos, and a person's supposed to spend money for Oynik Shabbos, let's say you have an individual, Rahman Aslan, who has no money, and he has two options. Either eat very meager meals on Shabbos, and not have to take from Tzedakah, or take from Tzedakah and eat large meals. Asay Shabbat Chachol V'Altad Starach L'Briyas. Don't take Tzedakah. So we see that this entire concept of Oynik Shabbos is not such a hard and fast rule. Because if it was such a hard and fast rule, you should be able to take Tzedakah. And that's why the Halacha, the Magen Avraham, and all the Paiskim can say that if we see that the price goes up on a specific food that's eaten for Shabbos, don't buy it until the price goes down. Machloikas HaPaiskim, how much it has to go up that the rule should kick in. Mr. Bruce says it has to go up by a third. Other Paiskim can say it doesn't have to go up by that much that this rule should kick in. Moreover, I saw from Shaila Tshuvos Beis Yehuda, he says that if it's a situation that the price went up and Beis Din says don't spend the money, nobody's allowed to break that rule. So let's say someone's going to say, okay, you know what? I won't go to the fish store to buy fish for Shabbos. I'll send an akum to be my shliach. Don't, because it's important to get that price lowered. So we learned that if there's a statement on the top and there's a statement on the bottom, in the shtar, we follow the statement on the bottom. Tana Rabbonin, Yimna Tachtam and Elyon Ba'is Achas, if there's a letter missing in the name on the bottom, if one letter of the name is missing, then the halach is that we say it's the same. Which means, let's say the person written to the shtar says, it says in the shtar, the Hanani owes me money. And the Mefarshim say the Gemara specifically uses examples of names that were in use, because Hanani is a name, and Hanan is a name. So if the top of the shtar says Hanani, and the bottom of the shtar says Hanan, we say that the cipher wanted to abbreviate the name, and therefore in the bottom, instead of writing out the whole name Hanani, he wrote Hanan. But if two letters from the name are missing, then we say it's not the same person. It's not that the cipher just wanted to use an abbreviation. And the Gemara explains itself. The Brice explains itself. Kegon, Hanan mi-Hanani. If on the top of the star it says Hanani, on the bottom of the star it says Hanan, we say it's the same individual. or Anan Manani. Now we understand, as I was about to say, why the Braisa uses Hanan and Anani, and because Hanan and Hanani are both names, and Anan and Anani are both names. However, Reuven, which is the typical name that the Gemara uses, couldn't be said, because Reuven is a name, but Reuv is not a name. So it's obvious that if Reuven is on the top of the star, and the bottom of the star doesn't have the whole name, it's the same person. Ask the Gemara. Why, if two letters of the name are missing, do we not assume it's the same person? Because we have to be concerned, says the Gemara. Then Misram Shem Ben Abba Isis, because maybe the name is a name of four letters. Hanani is a name of four letters. And if on the bottom it only says Chan, that means the Sofer left out half the name. So if two letters are missing, it means that the Sofer left out half the name. And no Sofer, says the Gemara, leaves out half the name. Ask the Gemara, if the concern is that half the name is left out, so why is the Braisa saying that if it's only one letter left out, it's certainly the same person? It could be half the name. Maybe the name is a name of only two-letter name. Let's say the name of the person is Chan, and you leave out one letter, that one letter is half the name. It was saying that whenever it could be a situation that half the name is being omitted, then we can't say it was a mistake of the cipher or an abbreviation of the cipher. So then why is the Braisa saying two letters? Even by one letter could be half the name. Ilhachi, asked the Gemara, Ilhois achas nami. Maybe the name was Chan, and if you only write down half of it, one letter, even though it's only one letter missing, have a pag of the Shema. And we're saying that you don't write half the name. A Sofer never only writes half the name, says the Gemara. El shtei oisius hayna tamid dima misrami shem ben sholos oisius v'avalei ruba de Shema, which means as follows. It has nothing to do with half the name. The Gemara is saying now that a Sofer may leave out half the name. And therefore, if there's a name of two letters, and you only have one letter on the bottom, which means you left out half the name, doesn't bother us. But, two letters, if two letters are left out, it could be a situation that's not just that you left out half the name, you left out most of the name. Because let's say you'll have a name that spelling is three letters, and you leave out two letters, that means you left out most of the name. So even if we could accept that a cipher will leave out half the name, he's never going to leave out most of the name. And leaving out two letters can represent a situation where most of the name is left out, therefore we can't say it's the same name. However, go on to Rishonim to say, so even if it's a situation where it's clear that even if two letters were left out, then not most of the name, it wouldn't change the din. Once the Braisa paskins that if two letters are left out, it may represent, in certain situations, a situation where most of the name is left out, even in the specific situation that we're now looking at, it's not most of the name, the halacha is if two letters are left out, we can't learn the top from the bottom, from the top from the bottom. Another halacha. Amra Papa. Pshitali, it's posha to me. Sefel mamala v'kefel mamata. The word sefel is written on the top of the star. Sefel meaning a bucket. Kefel meaning a garment. Hakel hoylech achat tachton. As we learned in the Mishnah, we always look at the end of the star if there's a contradiction. However, by Rapapa, kefel mamala is sefel mamata. The word kefel is used on top, and the word sefel is used on the bottom. Mai. What is the halacha? Micha shinin. Do we have to be concerned that actually he originally wrote the word kefel, both on top and on bottom? But what happened was, chashinen lezvuv, that perhaps a fly came, and while it was still wet, while the paper was still wet, schlepped out the word, the kuf, and to make it into a samach, oiloi. Or do we not have to be concerned about? And the Gemara remains with a taiku. So it's interesting to note, Posh Peshat in the Mishnah is that we, in the Gemara, this is the way most Rishonim, the Rashbam learns the Gemara, that we don't, that in, without this situation, we always follow the bottom. We don't have this concern. Why do we always follow the bottom? Because the halacha is, as we learned in Mishnah, we learn from the bottom rather than from the top of the shtar. Ask the nesivus, posh the kasha. Says, the Gemara came up with some sort of far-fetched situation. They were concerned that a fly came and schlepped the ink and made from a kuf into samach. Why do we have to worry about a fly? And I said that the person tampered with the shtar. Because as I said, a sefel means a bucket. A kefel means a garment. A bucket is obviously a lot cheaper than a garment. So he made a kuf into samach. And I won't owe you a garment, I'll only owe you a bucket. So the Nesivus answers, and this is the Aloch Lamaisa. Again, in our world, it's not that relevant because we don't write with quills. But they used to write with quills, and when they wrote with a quill, the ink had to dry. It says in the Nesivus that if a cipher is writing a shtar, he's not allowed to give the shtar until the ink dries. So the concern that the loiva might have tampered with the shtar isn't there because the shtar isn't given to him until it's actually dry. However, that a fly might have come while it's sitting in the cipher's office, that the Gemara's concern might have happened. So the Gemara remains with a teiku. So the Rashbam points out that we don't say here that since it's Maman HaMutl B'Safik, that since it's a question Yachloiku, but we say the Halacha of HaMotz B'Chaver Olav Araya. There are Rishonim, I think it's the Nemukhi Yosef, that says the Gemara has a teiku, and since it's a teiku, Maman HaMutl B'Safik Yachloiku. But most Rishonim don't agree, because they say, wherever the Halacha is, that the Halacha should be Yachloiku, the Gemara says so explicitly. And the fact that our Gemara doesn't say Yachloiku means that we don't divide it. It's rather going to be a situation of Maitz B'Chaver Olav Araya. Why don't we say Yachloiku? So two explanations. One explanation is that the only time we say Yachloiku is in a situation where there's a question, what exactly was the story? The famous Gemara Masechta Matzia, where the baby was born to the cow, and we don't know if the baby was born when I owned the cow or you owned the cow. So there's a suffix in Matzias. What exactly happened? So there, Halacha is Yachloiku. Here's not a question in Matzias. Here's a question in Din. Mi chashin in l'zvuv? Do we have to be concerned for a zvuv or not? And there we don't say Yachloiku. That's one explanation. Rav Chanan says another explanation, beautiful explanation. Rav Chanan says as follows. Where do we say Yachloiku? Where we truly can't know what happened. In this case, where you and I entered into a transaction, we know the truth. I don't even know if I owe you a coat or I owe you only a bucket. I just want to, perhaps, lie and cheat. So the halacha is not going to say yachloiku to support something that may be incorrect. Because the truth is known. It may not be known to Beis Din. Beis Din may have no way of knowing, but we know the truth. When somebody knows the truth, he may not be saying it, we don't say Yechlaiko. Ramosha uses this Gemara for an interesting shayla. The Ramah quotes a tshuva from the Rambam, the Sefer Pe'er Hador, where the Rambam says that Ksav Ashuris, the Ksav that we know was used to write Sifrei Kodesh, should not be used for writing anything but Sifrei Kodesh. The Ramah quotes that Rambam. And that's why newspapers or documents or anything should not be written in Ksav Ashuris, says Rav Moshe. And the question that Rav Moshe is discussing, because it comes up, sometimes people have Ksubis written, and they're written in Ksav Ashuris. And Ksubis is not a Kisvei Kodesh. So what's the halacha? So Rav Moshe points out that even though the Rambam quotes this in the Tshuva, he doesn't bring it down in the Mishnah Torah. And our Gemara seems to teach us that we don't follow Pesach of the Rambam. Because here we're talking about a shtar chayv, and the Gemara says that the kuf could easily become a samach. Where could a kuf easily become a samach? By Ksav Ashuris. So it's obvious that they used to write documents in Ksav Ashuris. That's Ramosha's raya. Ramosha, again, because the Ramah does quote the Rambam, he says the Ksav Ashuris, written Ksav Ashuris, if somebody's actually writing it, should not be used only for Kisvei Kodesh. But if it's not being written, it's just like a computer program, it's printed, we could be more lenient, especially after we learned our Gemara. Says the Gemara. Hahuda have a cost by Shitmei v'Zuzo. There was a document that says that I owe you 600 and a Zuz. So the question is, what do I owe you? 600 what? Shalcher of Shav Yikamei Dabaya. Shitmei Istri v'Zuzo. Does it represent that I owe you 600 Istra? Every Istra is 4 Zuz. I owe you 600 Istra and a Zuz. Oidoma, maybe it means I owe you Shitmei Priti. 600 Prutis and a Zuz. A very significant difference. Amalei, so he said to him, Dal Priti, it certainly can't mean that I owe you 600 pruta. The like Siva Bishtara. Nobody puts prutas into a shtar. What they would do is, the Suchi Mesachinle. Since prutas are such a small coin, it's like nobody would write 600 pennies. They would total, they would add up 600 pennies to mean $6. Nobody writes 600 prutas. The Suchi Mesachinle Majvinle Zuze. They add up the prutas into zuzim. But not a question, so we know for sure it doesn't mean 600 prutas. But what does it mean? My amrit, shitmei istri v'zuzi, does it mean 600 istri in a zuz, or does it mean shitmei zuzi v'chad zuzi, or 600 zuz in a zuz, which is very fun, very big difference also, because as I said, every istra has 4 zuz. Answers the Gemara, says the Gemara, the halach is, as we learned so many times in our shir, yad ba'al shtayal tachtayna. It can mean 601 zuz, or it can mean 600 istra in a zuz. Since people do put zuzim into a shtar, we always say hamotzi b'chaver olav araya, and we define it to mean 601 zuz.